live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to another fantastic episode of Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And my name is Rich.
And Alon, once again, has very, very foolishly decided to...
not to show up.
Yes, to leave the show in my control.
He's in, like, some state on vacation.
Which, hopefully he'll stay there, so I'll just get to do the show from now on.
I should give out his mobile phone and so people can call him and bug him. But he would not be happy about that.
Yeah, so maybe, like, if things really go downhill, then, you know, he'll be, like, calling the show. Maybe he'll call up and talk to us and tell us to knock it off or whatever.
I hope not.
So, we also have a very fantastic special guest this evening. His name is Ashish Amresh.
Hi, everybody.
And Ashish is a lecturer at the School of Computing and Informatics at ASU. And he's responsible for building a game curriculum there. And he's also the director of something called Camp Game. That's right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a pleasure to be on the show, Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I think it's an awesome concept. I unfortunately heard about the show only yesterday, and I'm so glad to be here and share my views and express my ideas about video game education and, in general, the video game industry with Ara and Rich today.
So it looks like we have, like, a preemptive caller. He actually called us before the show started. Do we know why Penn's calling? Does anyone know why?
Something about game language, kind of like what we were talking
game
about.
Game language, okay.
How you've mentioned.
Immersion, okay.
I don't know.
Let's ask Penn to, like, if you want, like, call back in a couple segments or just stay on the line for a while, and we're going to do this thing because actually we wanted to continue talking about immersion, which we started last week, and flow. And I'm all riled up about that stuff, so I definitely want to hear what he has to say.
Woo.
Yeah. But let's talk about Ashish's deal, and let's talk about Camp Game. And, well, why don't you tell us about what Camp Game is?
Camp Game is a unique 6-week experience for high school students in Arizona, and especially in the Phoenix Valley. It is an intense 8:30 to 4:30 Monday to Friday deal where they come in and they learn everything about video game development. And at the end of 6 weeks, they take out an actual playable video game to show to their parents, family, friends, build a portfolio, or do whatever with it. So it's an extremely teamwork-oriented group environment where everybody contributes inside of a team setting, whether they're programmers, level designers, or artists, and create a basic, simple idea that they all have at week one and bring it to life by week six inside of a playable game.
So now how is this different from, like, I don't know, all those, like, myriad schools where they, like, Collins College or UAT, where they, you know, they teach you how to make games and all that stuff? How is this different from an actual, like, game development education program?
So to step backwards, Camp Game's actually only a 6-week program for high school students. So this is a program that introduces them to the different facets of the game production pipeline inside of 6 weeks. So this is not actually a full-blown degree program like at Collins College or UAT, but this is actually a 6-week summer camp. It's almost like a boot camp. Most of the kids that come into Camp Game, they come in with an impression that the video game industry is all glamorous. It's you know, it's all fun.
Yeah, all playing games all day long.
But when they go through this boot camp, they really realize what it's all about. I have about like 40% of the kids who come in at the end of week six say this is not the industry for them. And this is exactly what we want out of Camp Game, to educate kids at an early stage that just because video games are fun, it doesn't mean it's easy to make them.
Yes, and I enjoy very much the aspect of dissuading as many people as possible away from game development.
Right, and we've been pretty successful with the way our curriculum has developed over the last 5 years. We started out at NYU. This was done for 3 years there, and I've been doing it at ASU for the last 2 years. And this year, this is actually the Camp Game is going on right now, and July 18th will be the last day of the camp. And that's when all the games will be ready, and anyone who wants to come and check it out to see what these kids could do in 6 weeks is more than welcome to do so.
All right, so I'm going to give out our phone number if anyone would like to call in. It's 866-536-1100. Locally, that's 602-277-KFNX. You can call. Maybe you have a question for Ashish. Maybe you have a question for Rich about why he likes to play games only on easy.
Ooh.
I don't know. Give us a call.
Bringing that back into the mix, are we?
Maybe Pen 15
has a
question
for Ashish.
That's
never going
to
die, is it? It's never going to die.
No.
Good.
Especially not after you telling me that you only played
good
Metal Gear Solid 4 on easy, but now you're going to try it on normal.
But yeah. So I think we could talk about it later.
Yeah, maybe later.
There's more stuff.
Okay, so one thing I'm curious about, Ashish, is how is, like, the program different now than, like, how it started, right? Like, how did it kind of evolve? I'm sure you're not doing the exact same thing that you used to do, right?
No, absolutely not. When we started with only 4 weeks. Then we realized 4 weeks is really not enough to make a playable game inside of a high school setting. Also, when we started, we were not really sure how the Unreal Engine would work. We used the Unreal 2.0 engine to create the games in this camp, and that was the first year when the engine had just come out. So over the first 3 years at NYU, actually, we kind of figured out that this needs to run for 6 weeks, and we also figured out the curriculum that exactly works inside of the high school setting, what high school kids can easily pick up, grab, and create beautiful stuff with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the last 2 years at ASU, it's really come to life. We've seen that the quality of games have gone from just lots of bugs and no playability, no tutorials, no controls, no good design, to really wonderful prototypes that, you know, I could actually say that these high school ideas and prototypes that come out in the last 2 years could actually go to a publisher, and he might be excited. He or she at the publisher level could be excited about these ideas. It's that amazing what the kids have come up with in the last few years.
Right on.
The way the program is designed, like, is it for people who already have some sort of knowledge with programming or things like that, or is it just kind of a, you don't need to necessarily know programming and we can throw you in and you can start doing stuff?
Yeah, this does not require any background whatsoever. We train them from scratch. What we do at the screening level is make sure that the students we get are highly motivated.
Mm-hmm.
They want to learn a lot about the game industry. They have a very good focus on joining the game industry, and they have done some research and played a lot of games. They understand what good games is versus bad games, what good design is.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to take those kids. And if we've learned over the past 5 years that just accepting anyone does not work, and
yeah,
it takes a certain kind of beast to really be part of this camp. So this year we had about 60 applicants, but we only took 15, even though we had room for 25.
Oh.
Because we focused on the fact that we want to get really motivated kids in this camp, because even if you have two or three skateboarders in there, it can spoil the entire, you know, look and feel of the camp. And that's what we wanted.
Especially if they're, like, skateboarding in the classroom.
Exactly. And that's what we wanted to avoid this year. And the way it's turned out, especially this year, is I am just amazed with the motivation that these kids have brought in. And I'm really excited for July 18th to see what kind of games have come out this year.
I'm impressed, too. I should say that I'm actually one of the instructors there at the camp. So mm-hmm. It's kind of funny because one of my friends that I used to work with, he taught for many, many years in game design, right? And he was always kind of, like, lamenting about, like, you know, yeah, the students are not motivated. They're just, you know, they're just there. They're not really, most of them don't really try very hard and all this other stuff. And I've just been like, I mean, this is my first exposure to actually teaching, right?
Right.
And I was like really impressed. I'm like, wow, you know, most of these kids, like pretty much all of them are like, they really want to do this stuff, you know? And there's like very, very few that are, you know, just goofing off. And, you know, those even, they don't goof off most of the time.
Right.
You know, so like, I think that's really awesome. I was kind of joking about it earlier, but, yeah, you know, like, it's funny, right? Like, everyone gets this impression that games are, like, you know, making games is kind of like playing games. So, like, oh, I like playing games, so I must like making them, too. You know, so, like, anything we can do to kind of, like, educate people about what making games is really like, I think is really awesome. And, you know, maybe we'll get a bunch of people to think that, like, to realize that, like, yeah, making games is not about, like, turning a knob while you're, like, resting on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'll be back in a little bit. Stay tuned. Radio. My name is Ara.
My name is Rick.
And we've got special guest Ashish here from ASU.
Yeah.
Now, before we get started, I got to mention that if you've got money burning a hole in your wallet and you really you really want to go make games, one thing you can do is go to UAT. You can go to UAT.com and learn how to do that.
So this is what happens when Alon leaves.
Yes. That's fantastic. Okay, so let's continue on with Ashish. So we were talking about Camp Game, and basically, you know, it's this short program, 6 weeks for high schoolers. But you're doing other things at ASU as well, right? You're not just doing Camp Game. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. ASU has this school called the School of Computing and Informatics, which is under the Ira Fulton School of Engineering. The School of Computing and Informatics might not sound, pretty well known because the area of computing and informatics is evolving and growing rapidly. But it houses the departments of computer science and departments of biomedical informatics. Okay, so I won't go into details of what those are, but somewhere along the line, we also have this gaming curriculum embedded in this informatics curriculum. And we plan to create degrees in informatics in the future, and we plan to create certificates in informatics. We already have a certificate in informatics, and we plan to launch a certificate in computer gaming. So what my responsibilities are is to build this entire curriculum for the certificate. And the certificate's going to be open for every student at ASU, okay? And it's whether they're degree or non-degree. So if you're like a business professional and want to know how games are made, you can join as a non-degree student at ASU and just do the certificate. It's an 18-credit, 6-course certificate that's going to be launched pretty soon, hopefully by end of this year. And that's what I'm developing. And this certificate has three main tracks. So it's not just one focus certificate. It has got some core courses, but you could focus or specialize in programming, art, or education, which is the casual business serious side of gaming. So it's got an interdisciplinary flavor to what the curriculum is going to look like. It's a short, it probably would take about 2 years, 6 courses. And also has an industry-oriented capstone project at the end of the curriculum that every student has to do to solve a real-world setting. So if you find a problem in the health industry, use skills that you learn in the certificate in computer gaming to solve that problem. If you have a problem in the business side of things, in supply chain management, in training, in human resources, the gaming skills, according to me, can transcend across any problems. It's just a skill that you can use to communicate and solve problems. And that's what we're trying to, send the message across to students who take it, is that this is not something that's going to get you a job in the game industry. This is not what we're evangelizing. What we're saying is we're going to give you the skill sets. You can use these skill sets in any field, whether you're a GIS major, whether you're a nursing student, whether you're an English student who wants to tell a good story, And that's what our whole focus with this new curriculum is.
So the curriculum hasn't started yet, right?
It hasn't started yet. It is in the process of evolving. It's very close to getting set up. It's probably happening either this fall or absolutely next spring.
So this is like literally like the genesis of a game studies related course, just everything at ASU, right? Because they haven't offered anything like this before.
Nothing like this has ever been offered at ASU. I really appreciate the vision of our director for the School of Computing and Informatics, Punch. He goes by the name of Punch. He's a long name. I don't want to mention his name, but he goes by the name of Punch. And he has really taken that extra effort to create innovative curriculum at the school. And thanks to him and his vision, we are fortunate enough to come up with this interdisciplinary, meaningful certificate that could transcend across disciplines and be available to every student who's always been interested to know how games get made.
Right on. Okay, we've got a call, actually.
Woo!
It's Jeff from Tempe.
Ooh.
Do we have Jeff?
Hi.
Hi, Jeff.
Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
I'm wondering, as a student who's trying to get into the gaming industry, do you feel it's better to go with, I suppose I want to say, what are the advantages of going with a degree from ASU over a degree from a private college?
Okay, I'll answer that. So a private college could give you a focused education. For example, let's take example of UAT.
So which private, is, we're talking about like
private
college,
UAT.
Yeah, well, let's take the example of UAT, which is a focused, specialized institute where you're going to get specific skills that are going to get you a job in a specific workplace. For example, if you do the game programming degree there, you're going to possibly end up getting a job in the gaming industry. But the gaming industry is extremely competitive and there's no guarantees. I'm sure nobody at UAT is going to give you a guarantee. You do our degree and we'll give you a job in the gaming industry. Mm-hmm. That's no one's going to be ever able to do that. The advantage of going to a regular university and getting a degree is that it gives you a lot more options.
Yeah.
You can get a well-rounded education. You can get all the technical skills that you probably might get at UAT, maybe not to the extent that they offer, but a basic education and all of the technologies available at most Research One universities, and ASU being one. And the School of Computing and Informatics actually has a really wide variety of courses and curriculum in technology and various fields that they can easily give a student who has a particular focus but also wants a well-rounded education. So depending on what you want to do, if you're a hell-bent, hardcore, stubborn guy who wants to get into the game industry and doesn't see anything beyond it, maybe some place like UAT would work out better. But if you want a well-rounded education, want to keep your options open, you're not absolutely certain where you want to end up 4 or 5 years from now, I think you should go to a place like ASU.
Yeah.
Or if you want to take the cheap masochist's route, you can just do what I did and just do stuff yourself until someone notices.
Don't go to college. No. But, I mean, yeah, kind of like that. Like, ASU is, like, you know, they're fully accredited university. So, like, if you don't go into a specific game design company program or whatever, you have more options where something like UAT, it can be good depending on what you're looking to go into. But your options are much more limited for a job-wise. So,
right.
Pretty much what he just said.
So what are you going to do, Jeff? We're going to put you on the spot.
I think I'm leaning towards ASU.
Yeah. And you can live in dorms for a year, and that's way more fun.
Yeah, but don't they have, like, a game room at UAT?
I don't know. They have dorms at UAT
plasma
now,
screens.
Too. But I don't know.
Every dorm room has a plasma screen?
No, that's
a
lie.
No, it's not true. Okay. All right, thanks for the call, Jeff.
Thanks for the answer. Bye.
All right, so, is there anything we left out? Is there anything more you'd like to say?
I just want to say that I think the whole video game industry is just going to become one of the major contributors to our economy in terms of not just making commercial games, but in terms of opening up the skill set that's required to make games for every other field that we can possibly imagine in the future. And it's also going to kind of break down and make it as a communication medium. Yeah. Like, for example, 20 years ago, nobody knew how to write an email, right?
Yeah.
So this is my hypothesis that 20 years from now, everybody will know how to make games, and they'll be using this skill set of making games as a communication medium. And that's why it is very essential to be on top of this technology and try to integrate that into your skill set early so that you'll have that cutting-edge outlook towards how this country and, in general, the world shapes up. And that's what we're trying to do at our school, is to try and create a workforce that'll be ready for the future. And we think that video games and virtual reality and immersion-based technologies are the communicating mediums that will be used by everyone in future, and that's where we're targeting our curriculum at.
You know what's really interesting? We were kind of having another conversation along the same lines earlier today, and the thing that I thought of was reminded of, I should say, is I don't know if you guys ever worked in fast food.
Yes.
I actually haven't worked in fast food.
I've never worked in fast
food. But, like, I kind of look over the counter a lot of times, right? And this actually has to do with video games, I promise. The really cool thing that I'm noticing is that lately, you know, a lot of the technology that they're using, especially, like, in places where you have to, like, quickly train employees, is that kind of, like, the interface to do the work, right? Because that's truly what it is. It's an interface. Is becoming more and more video game-like. I mean, they have a screen a lot of times, right? They have, like, a timer. You know, your performance is rated on, like, how well you do based on this timer. I mean, for all practical purposes, it could be like a cooking or a fast food video game, except you're actually doing it as your job.
Dude, Quiznos has a like flash-based game on their like corporate website to train you to memorize how to make sandwiches.
There you go.
I never got to play it.
You didn't get to play it.
I didn't get to play it. They didn't let me play it. But I was like, I want to play it. I was like, they have a video game for Quiznos? I want to play that.
This is what I'm talking about. See, games are becoming more and more ubiquitous than people think.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll be back. Stay with us.
Is Arizona's news talk leader, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. Lock it in.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Ara, this is Rich, and we have special guest Ashish.
Thank you for doing that.
All right, see, this we're going to do it like this, like quick. It's like lightning.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap up what we were talking about before. You wanted to give out a website?
Yeah, sure. The website's very simple for our school. It's sci.asu.edu. Once again, it's sci.asu.edu. All the information about our programs is up there, and go check us out.
So if you're interested in a games program and the new games curriculum that Ashish is coming up with, coming very, very soon, that's the address for that. If you want to call in, 866-536-1100. We'd love to take your call, especially if you if you're really pissed and disagree with what you were saying, which we haven't said much controversially yet, but we will soon.
Yeah, apparently.
Yes. Okay, so I've been waiting to talk about this for, like, what feels like years.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't been since we talked about it last week.
Yeah.
So, before we get into it, I know that Penn really wants to get on the air. So, let's hear what Penn has to say.
Penn.
If he's there. Is Penn there?
Hello.
Yes, I am.
What's happening, Penn?
It's been, like, a month. You disappeared.
Yeah, but that's because I have to wake up at 4 in the morning to go to work, so.
Okay, so as much as I'd like to berate you for not coming through with your commitments, why don't you tell us what you're calling about?
Well, actually it has to do with what you talked about, immersion and just game language. And for me, I see games like just as just pure games, as in story elements and sort of the visual aspects of it are less interesting. I'm more into the mechanics. And whenever I think of...
Like the part that's actually a game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Because specifically, like, when Rich plays a game on easy, that...
Ooh, that bothers this into me. It.
Does that offend your sensibilities?
Well, the only reason it does is because it's sort of like we've been teaching kids in our society now that, oh, when we play a game... we don't keep score, or when we play a game, everybody wins, everyone gets a medal. And it's sort of like, well, when you play a game as in real life, like let's say football, where there is no story, there is no visual, it's just these are the rules and this is your goal.
And your performance is your performance, whatever
exactly.
That happens to be.
And
this is really interesting because I think we're going to get to...
This is a lot of kind of what we're...
Yeah, but continue. Whoa. Without the static, preferably.
That.
Okay, that's really bad. Is he gone?
Penn!
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
That's your last chance. We run a very tight ship here at KFNX. Is he gone now?
I don't know.
Okay, he's gone. All right.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Well, that was
You don't get to call back. Wait, he's still here?
He's back now?
Yes.
Dude, okay. Penn, seriously.
All right, you're on my list right now, so make it good.
All right, so if you look at a game like God of War, I felt very disconnected from the character because a lot of the moves you do are very disconnected and sort of automated.
You mean because, like, you press one button and the guy does, like,
dude,
three black flips and four, like,
are we going to finally have this argument on air about God of War? Because I know you have a completely different view of this game than I do, and we've done it. We've argued about this game in chat.
No, no, okay, let's not get into God of War, because we have...
God of War is amazing.
We have way too much to talk about.
Well, no, I just wanted to... I just used it as an example for the immersion aspect, because if you play a game like Ninja Gaiden or Prince of Persia, the movement of the character, you are directly in control, and that's when I sort of lose myself in the game, because I'm so in control of the character that it feels like I'm really living the experience, as opposed to a game like The Bourne Conspiracy, where there's a lot of automated cutscenes where it's just you're not in control. You're just experiencing.
I think that this is awesome, because what you're saying is actually
really
what we were just about to talk about.
Yeah.
So I think you'll really enjoy the remainder of our show here. So I'm going to get off the phone with you, but if you want to like call back and if you get like really riled up or whatever, that's cool, or send us an email, because we're about to get into some really deep stuff here.
All right, I'm excited to hear it.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks for the call. Okay, so check this out, right? I know that we talked about Flow before. Flow the game.
Yes.
Yes, okay, and we were talking about like immersion last week, and I want to talk about what Flow really is compared to Flow the game. Okay, so what is Flow?
The theory in psychology?
Not the game. Yeah, this is psychological theory, right? It was it was a term coined by this guy named a psychologist named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, okay? In an interview he said, call
Very
me
nice.
Mike. So we're going to call him Mike, okay?
Okay.
Or maybe Mihaly. I like Mihaly better, actually. So anyway, I wanted to read something in an interview where he defines what flow is so that we're all basically all on the same page about what we're talking about. And then we're going to look at the game flow in comparison.
And now it has none of them.
And yes, I was going to leave a little
none
cliffhanger there.
No, I'm just going to... I'm ruining it.
Okay,
it has,
no cliffhanger.
It has nothing to do with flow.
Okay, so this is flow, okay? I'm reading an interview with the Dr. Mihaly from some website. Okay, so in the early 70s, I spoke... This is him, right? Not me. With chess players, rock climbers, musicians, and inner-city basketball players... asking them to describe their experience when they were at, when what they were doing was really going well. I really expected quite different stories to emerge, but the interviews seemed, in many important ways, to focus on the same quality of the experience. For instance, the fact that you were completely immersed in what you were doing, that the concentration was very high, that you knew what you had to do moment by moment, that you had very quick and precise feedback as to how well you were doing, and that you felt that your abilities were stretched but not overwhelmed by the opportunities for action. In other words, the challenges were in balance with the skills. And when those conditions were present, you began to forget all the things that bothered you in everyday life. Forget yourself as an entity separate from what was going on. You felt like you were part of something greater and just moving along with the logic, and dare I say it, flow of the activity. Right? Now, why is this so interesting, right? Well, actually, Rich, you said it better than me right before the show.
What did I say?
You said that like all these things that are parts of flow is just what makes a good game.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, I've, like, when you're playing a game, I know a lot of times I'm thinking, oh, this is so good about this game. And you talk about these things separately, but this week, basically, is the first time I've really been reading about flow. And there's, like, this huge, like, checklist of, like, what is not necessarily, required. Like, not all of them are required, but, like, most of them happen.
Right. So those are like a lot of the things that I just read.
Yeah.
These are the components of what causes this kind of like flow state, you know?
And I'm just like, all of those things are what makes a good game. And you talk about them separately all the time.
Right.
But like, it makes so much sense when you put them all together and say, you need to have all of these things and you're going to have pretty much guaranteed a good game.
Okay. Now, the thing that I might point out is that flow is not like one of these things, right? Flow is like something that happens, you know, when now, and we don't know how well defined this word is because we did some research on the internet and there isn't like, there doesn't seem to be a very, very exact and precise definition.
It's psychology.
Right? All right. So this is like a very, I mean, this is like a relatively new concept. I know that like when the book came out, there's a book called Flow.
I want to read it.
When the book came out some years ago, there's all of this like, everyone was going nuts about it, everyone's going crazy about it. Anyway. What does this have to do with games other than what we said, right? Well, there's this game called Flow, right? And you guys you guys remember how I was always complaining about this game called Flow is like not even really a game.
I think
it's
kind
of a stretch to call it as such.
I think I've said on the show at least 15 times that Flow is not a video game.
Okay, so here's what I did was I actually went to the guy who made Flow's website, Genova Chen, and mm-hmm. I read his thesis because I'm really interested in figuring out, okay, like, what is this all about? What was his goal when he was making this game, right? And the interesting thing is that if you actually, like, read, and I actually encourage you to go and read his webpage and read the thesis, because it's actually, it's kind of confusing, right? Because he defines fun as flow.
Okay? Yeah.
And this is the first thing that entered my mind was, well, flow is fun, right? But not everything that's fun is flow, mm-hmm. right? If you're enjoying something a lot and you're comfortable, that doesn't mean you're in this flow state, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we got a lot more to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Please stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes, guys. The final segment, Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
Oh, we're not doing that thing again where you name.
I like to mix it up, you know?
Yeah, my name's Rich.
Yeah, I like to keep people on their toes.
So when you do the point, that means I have to say my own
name?
That
means you start talking. That's what that means.
Okay, yeah. So...
nonverbal communication. All right, so...
Our guest is still with us, too.
Our guest is still with us, and we're talking about flow.
Uh-huh.
And we're talking about Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi.
Yeah,
because I like pronouncing complicated...
Flow,
hard to pronounce
and
words.
The dude.
And Flow and the game. And if you want to go to UAT, you should really go there. It's really awesome. Go to UAT. Okay.
UAT.edu is the website. So if you don't know how to Google search, there you go.
Then maybe you shouldn't go.
Yeah. Then you have other problems.
All right. So here's a few interesting things I found about this concept of flow. I'm going to tell you guys what I think flow is or what it means to me, right?
Shoot.
Basically, the easiest way I can put it is Rock Band, Guitar Hero. That is like the most precise and succinct encapsulation of what a flow experience is, or like DDR, a lot of these music games, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really, like, which is, I don't know, it's ironic because the game Flow is like 180 degrees from that.
Oh, it's not a game.
In terms of intensity of... experience, in terms of, you know, the emotional content of what you're getting out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a few interesting things that I learned, right? This idea of flow, according to Mihaly, there's a few, besides what we mentioned, there's a few really important aspects that you have to have when you have flow, okay? One of them is that the concept of overlearning is very, very important, okay? And what overlearning means is, it's an education term, which basically means that you've practiced something well beyond the point of mastery, to the point that it's almost automatic. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like
second nature.
Yeah, like playing Rock Band.
So you're like, just like hitting buttons.
Yeah. So you have to, that's like a really important factor. You have to, I think, overlearn something to a certain point before you can actually like experience that flow state.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Other things like having a sense of control, right? Concentration is essential. Okay? Now here's the stuff that gets me, right? I read on Genova Chen's page about what flow is and what his game is about, right? And he makes some references that, I don't know, they just seem like kind of contradictory to, I'm trying to like look at my notes and talk at the same time, right? So basically, what his game tries to do is this thing called dynamic difficulty adjustment, okay?
Which is a good idea.
Which is,
but
let's not get into that because I don't think it's a good idea.
Well...
But basically, the way flow is constructed is that the actions that you take in your game directly affect the difficulty of the game,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he distinguishes between passive difficulty adjustment and dynamic difficulty adjustment, or active difficulty adjustment. I'm sorry, passive and active DDA, okay? We're using a lot of catchphrases in these terms. So passive difficulty adjustment or dynamic difficulty adjustment is something like, I don't know, what they do in, like, Ratchet and Clank, where they actually do this. Certain parts
awesome.
Of the game.
Anyways.
If, like, let's say you're, like, running and you're trying to escape, like, some rising water or something, right? The first time, if you fail, it gets easier. Mm-hmm. If you fail again, it gets easier. You know what? It keeps getting easier until you don't fail.
It's almost like a GMAT test or a one of those DRE tests.
And actually, Janovich had actually referenced that in his paper about this is like a dynamic difficulty thing. That's like the passive way of doing it. Okay, so he came up with this active way of doing it where your actions directly affect what happens, right? So like, for example, in flow, like if you attack a lot of enemies, then maybe you get more enemies, right? Or if you go like, if you decide to like eat that red pill or whatever, and you go deeper down into the layers of the game, it gets harder, right? And if you like run away from a lot of enemies, then it gets easier, okay? Here's the interesting thing, right? Something that I've never heard anybody mention is that, think about the games that induce what we're calling flow, right? Do they have any of this?
No.
They absolutely do not have any of this. In fact, all the games that you can think of, I bet, and if there's anyone who feels otherwise, I'd really love to hear from you. All these games that do this kind of dynamic difficulty adjustment thing, whatever their method is, you don't have this kind of flow experience at all. And I think that it's because of the intrinsic design of the way these systems work. They basically bring you up to when you're about to get to a flow state, but then they actually prevent you from getting there. Because what happens, right? Like in flow, for example, let's assume for the moment that it's not an unbearably slow game, okay?
Yeah. Oh.
Let's say you're going along, okay, like it's too easy. The game's too easy. I want to make it harder, right?
Yeah.
So you make it harder. So maybe you're not doing it deliberately. Maybe you're not doing it consciously, right? But you're attacking a lot of enemies. You're going deeper. You're trying to progress as far as you can. These actions effectively make the game harder and harder, right?
Yeah.
You get to a point where it's too hard for you, right? And then what happens? It makes the game easier.
Yeah, takes you back up to the previous level.
It makes the game easier. Right when you're at a point where you're challenged at your limit, it makes the game easier. Now, one of the things that's really crucial to having like this flow state is these things that games like Guitar Hero and Rock Band and the music games and straight up old school shooters, which I love so much.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that they do is they're completely static in terms of difficulty, and the advantage that that thing gives you, that it seems like everybody talking about dynamic difficulty seems to dismiss, is that you get to a point where your limit of your ability is challenged, right? And you're like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this, right? And okay, maybe you fail, but then what happens? You try again, right? Maybe you don't fail. And then what happens is you actually overcome what you thought was your ability, right? And that's an immense feeling of satisfaction, right? Now, there's two ways that can happen, right? I mean, you can be like through this long, grueling battle with a boss or something where you feel like you're on the edge and you can just fail at any moment and you just barely made it, right? But if you just like step back from that, like just like a millimeter, right? It's this place where like you're getting challenged continuously,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is the state that I think that Mihaly's talking about, right? It's not this weird like, oh, I'm challenged but not too much. Like, no, you're really, really challenged. You're challenged to the point that it makes you stretch your own abilities at that very moment.
Yeah, that's one thing they talk about is, the skill versus difficulty of it.
Right.
And when you're in that state of flow, your skill actually increases. And people have said this, like in sports, one thing they referenced, playing basketball, like people say, like, it feels like the hoop's bigger. Like they're just able to make their shots.
Right,
like
right,
they have
right.
this perception that they're better than they actually are, like than their average performance.
Right.
They get better than that. So they like, just that little inch more of out of their performance like really makes them get into the state of flow.
Right. And sports don't have dynamic difficulty adjustments.
I mean, just
right?
based on who you're playing against. But I think the thing with that Janovich doesn't understand is they talk about this, ability versus difficulty. And I think, they have a graph and there's like that there's that place of flow where your difficulty matches or your ability matches the difficulty just right. But I think he seems to think there's a lot bigger margin there than there really is. I think it's very small margin.
No, I agree. The thing that really,
where it is.
Yeah, the thing that really disturbed me, just reading his thesis and his material, is that like this idea of flow is like almost like it's presented as like a panacea for everything. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like at least like game related, right? It's like, oh, it has applications in advertising and negotiation and dating and all these irrelevant things, and everybody can be in flow, and you want to be in flow all the time, and and it's like no, this isn't something that happens all the time. This is something that, all the best examples of this flow state are, concerning situations like sports and music where people have been practicing a skill that has been very, very difficult to begin with. Now, you know, I love to be an idealist, you know, and I love to say that, you know what, like, the more we can do to kind of, like, bring people up to, you know, being able to access that kind of thing is better. But the way that it's being presented, I mean, like, he's talking about, he directly references, here's a quote, I mean, when the player is in the flow of just jumping around in Super Mario Brothers but not finishing any level. You know, there's like an assumption that, like, someone with a modicum or a minimum of, like, skill will find flow in just jumping around at Super Mario Brothers.
It's not now, that easy.
It's no, that's not flow.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, it's enjoying yourself, maybe. It's fun, maybe.
It's fun.
It's not overachievement, for sure.
Yeah.
Right,
and that's one thing Genova does, is he replaces the word fun with flow. And that's
right.
What
and
he's saying.
I don't agree with
those
that
are not
at all.
Interchangeable.
I don't agree with that at all. And you
when
know,
you're in flow, you're very likely having fun.
Right.
Or, you know, enjoying yourself. But just because you're having fun does not mean you're in flow at all.
Right. So, I mean,
so
I don't know. There's certain things that this is the best way to put it, right? Mihaly says, the state that I call flow depends on increasing skill and challenge,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's the thing. Like, I mean, I think we're kind of saying the same thing at this point, right? It's like you really have to be literally on that edge. And I think that edge is not something that can be easily and readily attained. And I think it's a mistake to believe that, you know, it's something that, well, you know, yeah, you know, if the game's fun, then you're flowing in it. I think that's a misuse of the term, and maybe we need a better definition for the word. Maybe we need to, like, distinguish between, you know, enjoying yourself and not really, like, pushing your abilities to the maximal point, which is what I think Mihaly means by flow.
Yeah.
And the other, like, you know, lesser, you know, I don't know, less intense aspect.
Right, and it could be different for everyone, right? It could be different for Yumi and
oh,
Rich,
definitely.
Because, for example, with Tetris.
Right, but we shouldn't use that as a cop-out
to
broaden our definition to just suit whatever we want.
Yeah, it definitely means it should have some overachievement scenario there. But if overachievement for me is level 10 in Tetris versus it's level 30 for you,
right.
It's still we're both experiencing flow. That's the thing that probably is somewhat confusing. People might want to think that 30 is for everybody, which is not.
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be unique for each person.
Right. I definitely agree that it is different for different people, but I think it's not as different as Genova's work suggests.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, I don't know. I mean, I know that you've experienced this. I don't know
if
you've experienced this specifically, right? But I've kind of mentioned this in previous shows when there's a certain point where if I'm playing a game that, you know, it's funny, right? I never thought of it in these terms, but yeah, that I've over-practiced, right? Over-learned, you know, just played the heck out of, right? Over and over again. And sometimes, like, you'll just get into this point where I actually feel like what my reflexes are doing are ahead of what my consciousness can keep up with, right? That's flow, right? That doesn't happen in a game called flow.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely. I don't know.
And just a little bit to put in here at the end, the matching of ability and difficulty is just the first step. I mean, it can't just be that. That's
first. You know,
I think that's the essential part.
We gotta take that to further.
And
shows,
then there's all these other things.
I still want to argue with you about that one. All right, guys, thanks for listening. It was a fantastic show. Email us, call us. We'll see you soon. Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.